Coming up on Tech News Today, the NVIDIA Shield gets some new features. Is it any better of an idea for PC gamers now? Also, is Google behind the mysterious floating barges in Portland, Maine and San Francisco? And Facebook helping Nielsen to rate mobile phone TV usage. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, October 28th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT10. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show that keeps you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world. Puts them in some context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day, the news feeds. LG's G Flex is all grown up and official now. The curved phone has a 720p 6-inch display, which LG calls IMAX-like, proving once and for all that IMAX is now meaningless. A self-healing coating on the back smooths over scratches, along with the 2.3 gigahertz Snapdragon 800 processor, 2 gigs of RAM, and a 13-megapixel camera. The nicest thing may be the 3,500 milliamp hour battery. G Flex comes to South Korea in November, with other markets to follow.
A large structure built on a barge docked in the San Francisco Bay may become a floating Google data center. CNET reports that Google has possibly set up shop on Treasure Island, which is located between San Francisco and Oakland, and has possibly been building a large structure made from shipping or cargo containers on that barge, and it might be a floating data center. Well, Google itself has a patent for such a concept, so it's not necessarily a big stretch. But Google has not responded to multiple requests for comment.
No, but data center. To the boat. Apple's good at a lot of things, but apparently it can't wrap its head around daylight saving time. Apple Insider reports that a number of iOS 7 users found their devices are displaying the time incorrectly inside their iOS calendar app. The good news is that the issue doesn't seem to affect alarms or calendar events from sounding at their correct times.
Nielsen has been testing new ratings that take into account mobile viewing and now has announced a wider rollout with an SDK for participating broadcasters coming in mid-November. The system monitors DVRs, internet-connected TVs, tablets, smartphones, and browsers, and relies on Facebook, among others, to match demographic information. The tech also includes audio, watermarks, and metadata analysis.
The Nexus 5. Leaked photos, leaked video, product shots. They've all accidentally made it to Google Play already. So we kind of know that Google's new smartphone is coming soon. But the wait may be over on November 1st. This is according to a leak from EvLeaks on Twitter. Tweeted a photo of a Nexus 5 with a white back panel and a reference to the first. So that's unclear. It could be the announcement date or the retail launch of the phone, which has also been rumored for October 31st press conference.
We don't cover enough writing instruments on the show, and that's going to get corrected right now.
Okay.
Because the LiveScribe introduced a new smart pen called LiveScribe 3. Now, unlike previous versions, the LiveScribe 3 is a lot sleeker and pairs with a new app from LiveScribe instead of using Evernote integration. Notes you write are digitized and are searchable. Right now, the app is iOS only, with Android support coming soon. The LiveScribe 3 costs about $150.
And we don't cover enough AI either, so let's take care of that one as well. A company called Vicarious claims to have created software capable of accurately filling in CAPTCHAs, something I can't seem to do. Those are those login puzzles. They're supposed to separate humans from bots. Vicarious claims it has cracked CAPTCHAs at Google, eBay, and PayPal, all in an effort not to become a monster spammer, but to show that Vicarious Recursive Cortical Network, their AI product, is sophisticated enough to hang with other AIs like IBM's Watson.
The NVIDIA Shield is getting some big upgrades thanks to an over-the-air update. The Shield gets Android 4.3 and GameStream is now out of beta. The handheld also supports a new console mode where you can attach the Shield to your TV and a wireless controller to play Shield games on your big screen.
U.S. Attorney Paul Fishman announced that Lori Love, 28, of Strathall, Suffolk, England, has been charged with one count of accessing a U.S. department or agency computer without permission and one count of conspiracy. Love was arrested Friday by U.K.'s National Crime Agency in connection with a separate investigation. Love is accused of accessing networks for the U.S. Department of Defense's Missile Defense Agency, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and NASA, among others.
Samsung just signed a deal with the NBA. It's going to be playing center for the Chicago Bulls. That's not right. The terms of the deal weren't disclosed, but the Wall Street Journal says it's a three-year deal, $100 million. NBA officials will start using Samsung tablets to review plays, and Samsung devices will gain access to recaps and analysis of NBA action.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace.com, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, or online store. I use it for TomMerrittBooks.com when I've got new books. Like, I've got a new book with Scott Johnson, Illustrated Tech History, Kindle Single. Goes up on my Squarespace site because it's easy. It's fast and it looks good. I suck at design, but Squarespace is amazing and they make me look good. They have more than 20 new beautiful templates for you to start with and all the style options you need to create a unique website for you or your business. They've won awards. It's more than 20. The 20 is just the new ones. They've won awards from the Webbies, from Forbes, from FWA, and it's easy to use. If you want some help, Squarespace has an amazing support team. They're around 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but you're probably not going to have to use it that much. It's pretty obvious what you need to do, and they're commerce ready. They're providing a powerful and flexible e-commerce solution integrated to work with every template that Squarespace has. Lets you sell physical and digital goods, so you can sell music CDs or you can sell MP3s or both. You have one interface for order management, tracking orders, customizing customer email updates, printing shipping labels, and adding coupons. And they're worldwide. They work in the US, the UK, Canada, Australia, Belgium, France, Germany, Ireland, the Netherlands, and Spain. Start it right now, though. Go check it out. You don't have to give them a credit card or nothing. Just start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, do make sure to use the offer code TNT10 to get 10% off and show your support for Tech News Today. We thank Squarespace for their support of us. They're big time, man. They've got TV commercials and everything, but they're still supporting Tech News Today. So thank you, Squarespace. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. All right, joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, Peter Rojas, VP of Strategy at AOL and co-founder of Gadget.com. How's it going, Pete? Good to have you, man.
Hey, good. Thanks. Good to be back.
Let's talk a little about NVIDIA Shield getting some upgrades. What's the scoop on this, IS?
Yeah, the over-the-air software, like Sarah mentioned, Android 4.3. GameStream is now out of beta, which is much more reliable, according to The Verge. It can connect users' home PCs to stream games. Over 50 supported PC games at this point. And there's increased compatibility with Android games thanks to GamePad Mapper. So now the device can take games that never had hardware control and map them to the actual hardware controller if you want to do that. Mm-hmm. Console mode lets you connect your Shield to your TV for 1080p gaming. There used to be an old mode where you connect your Shield, but it only mirrored 720p display. Now you can do 1080p gaming. It shuts off the internal screen of the handheld and it pairs with a wireless controller. So you can use a whole console kind of experience with this. NVIDIA has also added the ability to put Android games on a micro SD card if you want to do that. PC streaming, not exactly ready for 1080p yet, but right now the streaming games can do 720p at 60 frames a second. $300 NVIDIA Shield. Peter, does this oddball device seem like a good idea now?
Well, I guess it's a niche device, and I think it depends on whether you're a hardcore enough gamer to want something like this. I mean, I don't think the average person is going to be interested in it. I think that they probably feel like they get enough out of, if they're looking for portable gaming, they get enough out of their smartphone, and if they're and probably a console is probably enough for them if they want to do something more serious than that. But I think that there's definitely sort of a niche of very hardcore PC gamers for whom this is something that appeals to them. I don't really know how big that market is, but I think it's definitely out there.
Yeah, I look at this and I wonder if they're getting pushed a little by the idea of Valve and their projects, especially when I look at GamePad Mapper. It seems like people are starting to really pay attention to that PC market and say we want a slice of it. Even though I think Peter's right, it's still a niche market for the hardcore gamer. But $350, is that right? Is that what this thing is?
$300. $299 at Amazon.
It's not a bad flyer for somebody who's really serious about gaming to give it a shot. But I do think that it is a slice of the market, right?
Yeah. When I look at this, these look like features that would have been excellent when the device launched itself. Obviously, Android 4.3 wasn't out at the time. But having the console mode, it makes it a little bit more palatable. If you're going to spend $300 on a device, and you can be your portable and it can be your home console. It makes it a little bit more appealing, although you're talking about adding another controller and an HDMI cable, those kinds of things. I just don't know if this thing's going to stack up against things like the Xbox One, the PS4, and even the Nintendo Wii U.
But I don't think it's really meant to. They're not. It's not really a competitor for those. I mean, I don't think you would buy this over an Xbox One. I think that a lot of people that you know this is targeted at would either buy both or they're very focused on PC gaming.
I could see that.
I was just going to say, and I don't even think it's meant to be an entirely an alternative to your PC for the PC gamer. I think it's supposed to be like, hey, you want to have a little better solution for your PC gamer and other in PC games in other rooms. Here's something that's not going to break the bank. That'll help you extend your gaming habit.
It's like a companion
device. And I think that they know. I mean, I think it's the reason why I think they branded it as an NVIDIA device because, the prime market for NVIDIA cards are these hardcore gamers.
I think it's competing for dollars at that point, right? So if you're going to have one or two of these things, I could see it being a companion device, but $300 for a companion device seems pricey. You'd probably get a smartphone, and it's very limited as a piece of hardware when it comes to what it is. It's not like you can pop the touchscreen off and use that as a tablet like the other devices. That's why I've always thought it was strange that it was this clamshell all-in-one device that's trying to be lots of different things at once.
No, it's definitely very narrow targeted, I would say.
Yeah, and I think NVIDIA is probably looking at it as a learning process. They're looking at it a little bit as a demo to say, hey, other companies who might want to use our cards, here's one thing you might be able to do with it, and they're hoping people imitate them. I'm not sure that that's going to happen. We'll see. But also a way for them to maybe perfect future versions of this and come up with different variations of it.
Another variation would be for them to do a console, right? To do like an Ouya competitor.
Yeah.
That would seem the more natural way to do this.
I think that's the logical direction that they would go in. Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a weird barge off the coast of Portland, Maine, and Treasure Island in San Francisco Bay. It seems to be made out of, if not cargo containers, at least something like cargo containers. Daniel Turtiman of CNET reports that Google has a patent on a floating data center, and his sources were telling him, they thought that's what that was. Both barges are owned by a company called By and Large LLC. Now, the contact at Treasure Island is a guy named Tim Brandon, who was originally on LinkedIn, listed as senior transaction manager for commercial business real estate at Google. He has since taken away the Google from his LinkedIn profile. KPIX, the local CBS station in San Francisco, reports that it's a floating Google Glass store that is meant to dock at Fort Mason, and that Google is trying to get a permit from the San Francisco Bay Conservation and Development Commission, and they're having a hard time doing it, which is why it's still docked at Treasure Island. Mysterious barges on both coasts of the United States. Peter Rojas, what is your best guess of what's going on here?
Well, I think that the safe guess is that it's something related to Google Glass or maybe Google Glass plus selling the new Nexus devices and things like that, which are coming out. It could certainly be both, right? It could be a data center plus a retail store, or some demo or a demo space or something like that. I guess that wouldn't be impossible, though. I guess it'd be a little impractical, but it's a really interesting way to approach the problem. Imagine if Google wanted to find a place to show off Google Glass, that they could do something that was a lot easier, but maybe it wouldn't get quite as much attention.
I'm just not sure why it's important to have a floating data center. I mean, why does Google have a patent on this?
Well, disasters. That's the idea is like if you have a data center that's docked and there's an earthquake or some other major disaster, nuclear bomb, I don't know, this could float off into the waters and be wave powered and it would be able to preserve data connectivity.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the water would be more volatile in a disaster.
Well, so they patented the process.
There was a fire on land, I guess then you're in good shape out there.
I'm really hoping they're like effectively pop-up stores, I guess float-up stores. Yeah. That's what I want. Like, because that seems like Google's kind of MO these days. They've got like, we'll introduce Google Glass by jumping out of a Zeppelin or something crazy. So to have attention over their products, it seems like Google would have enough money to, and also be crazy enough to have just a store that floats up from the coast. And you're like, here's your store. Here's your beautiful Google Glass experience. And we'll even take you for a cruise so you can have these wonderful images that you took with your Google Glass in your first experience.
So here's the thing I'm trying to figure out is how do you patent a data center on a boat? Because, how is that patentable? I mean, it's like put, it's like, it'd be like, I'm going to put, I mean, how do you, it's just a regular thing on a boat. I mean, how is that? What's the invention? Right. It'd be like me saying like, I'm going to put a restaurant on a boat. I patented that. Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
I'm on a basketball court.
Yeah, exactly.
It does look like they, and I by no means am a patent expert, nor have I read the entire patent, but it does seem like part of it has to do with the electrical generator that is a sea-based electrical generator that uses the waves to create energy. And there's seawater cooling, which with salt water is a difficult proposition. The patent probably relates to that stuff. It seems to spend a lot of time talking about those.
Well, I mean, that certainly makes more sense, but that's, you know, not as fun.
Yeah. No, it's definitely not as fun. I think you may have hit on it that this is probably Google's crazy floating data center idea, which has been kicking around. Obviously, they have a real patent for it. And yet, it is probably also a Google Glass store. And a lot of people are saying, well, how could it be a store? There's not enough entrances and exits. There's no windows here. But the store could just be a little demo area in a corner of the boat, and the rest of it's the data center, and they kill two birds with one stone.
that would be great.
Yeah. This thing is going to float down to New York City. You watch, coming from Portland, Maine, and it's already in San Francisco, so it's on its way. I guarantee you, you'll be buying Google Glass off this if they can get the permits.
Waterworld comes to life.
So I'm going to patent a data center submarine.
the submersible data center is still under development.
It's like, what can you buy out there? Some Google Glass. What else? No, that's it.
We might have a couple of Nexus 7s in the back. Let me look. Nielsen, going to start rating your phone viewing. This could be big for the unification of ad ratings.
Absolutely, yeah, because as many of you know, you don't just watch TV traditionally anymore. There are all sorts of ways that you might consume a program or a movie that you like. This is something that Nielsen's been testing for a while, but is ready to launch an SDK for participating broadcasters in mid-November. We don't have a specific date, but, you know, in a couple weeks. So the idea is we've got your old-fashioned, if you want to call it that, traditional way to consume television, which Nielsen has been tracking for many, many years. Some say it's a terrible way to track it, but that's sort of the system that we have. But now it will include things like DVRs, internet-connected televisions, tablets, smartphones, browsers, all different ways that you can watch stuff. So to work out which stream is being watched by whom and where, Nielsen will parse together what it calls big data and then a census-style measurement approach, which is the way that it's worked in the past. This will match demographic information through social networks. And Nielsen mentions Facebook explicitly. Now, Nielsen already has a partnership with Twitter, and they're going to be going forward with that. But it sounds like getting people's demographic information from Facebook is a grand slam because people fill out so much information about themselves on Facebook, not just where you live and how old you are, but the kind of TV shows you like and who you might be sharing with. That's all interesting data. Nielsen says that they want to accurately reveal who's watching TV ads and who's watching shows a different way. Are you bypassing ads altogether? Are you seeing different ads because maybe you're watching Saturday Night Live via Hulu Plus rather than on NBC on Saturday night? Pete, when you hear all of this, do you think that Nielsen using Facebook demographic info makes a lot of sense for advertisers? Is that the best place to pull this from?
Well, I think advertisers certainly want to have as much data as they can about the audiences that are, watching their programming. And the thing that is, is challenging is that it's a lot easier to track someone when they're using the desktop web, like the regular web browser with third-party cookies and things like that. But when you get into a mobile device, it's actually a lot harder to track users across devices like that. And so I think being able to have new ways to do that is obviously really attractive to advertisers. I'm not sure that users are as interested in that, for example. I think that there's a big concern about the privacy issue around third-party cookies and, mm-hmm. Tracking on multiple devices. So I can certainly understand why Nielsen is trying to do this, because I think that the richer data that they can offer, the more advertisers are going to be interested in it. I do think that in terms of being able to measure the size of the audience, and that's something that could be done on the provider end. I mean, Hulu knows how many times it streams, Saturday Night Live each day. I think it's matching that up with the demographic information that is really the challenge.
Yeah, this is a huge deal for getting your ability to watch video online too, right? The knock-on effect of this down the road would be an easier way to watch broadcast television immediately, maybe even at the same time that it airs on TV. Because one of the reasons they don't want to do that is they want to preserve the advertising model that's going on with broadcast TV. They don't want you to watch it online because they don't get credit for that when they sell the ads. If this comes along and says, we'll now be able to apportion credit, you'll be able to have local ads filtered in, and it doesn't matter if someone's watching it on their phone or their laptop or the television, it's still the same rating for the ad that you're selling, then suddenly the local broadcast network, the local broadcast channel and the broadcast network don't care that you're watching it on the phone, and you likely would be able to get more access to television in more places. The other thing that they have to work out is carriage fees, though, right? They get carriage fees from the cable companies right now. If they let you watch live on the internet, they got to replace that revenue as well. But this is one of the major pieces to getting to watch what you want, where you want.
Yeah, I think we still have a lot of things to untangle, but I think from a monetization standpoint, if they can get the same advertising rates or close to them for online views as they can from broadcast views, they're certainly not going to have a problem with moving that. I think it's a delicate balance between you don't want to upset the relationship with the MSOs, which carry your channels, even though you are getting paid for that. You don't want to give me a position where they drop you altogether and stop paying you, and you haven't been able to make up, you aren't able to make up the revenue via pure online distribution.
Yeah, and there's a definite movement among the MSOs to resist paying those fees. In fact, Ayaz has got that story in just a second. Let's thank our other sponsor for today's show, Gazelle. If you're thinking about getting a new tablet, maybe it's an iPad, maybe it's a Surface, maybe it's a new Nexus tablet, maybe it's one of those Nokia tablets, who knows, you probably want to get some money. Maybe you want to get a new iPhone. Well, Gazelle wants to buy your used iPhone, iPad, or smartphone, and you can lock that price in today for 30 days. Gazelle will set your price right now, and they'll honor it for the next month. So go to Gazelle.com. Find the item you want to sell. Tell Gazelle the condition. Be honest, they're going to check, but they'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads in cases. Get a risk-free offer for your gadgets and free shipping, and then you'll get paid fast by check, PayPal, or an extra 5% bonus if you choose an Amazon gift card. Go to Gazelle.com right now. Get an offer for your iPhone or your iPad. It's trustworthy. They've paid more than $100 million to over 700,000 customers, and I've done it myself. Free shipping, fast processing, no hassles. What's your iPhone worth? Take a minute, go to gazelle.com and find out. Do it now, though, because your iPhone may lose value the longer you wait. You can lock that thing in for 30 days. That gives you time to replace it. Gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right, so Pete just mentioned that the MSOs might bolt if the broadcasters aren't careful, and there's a Bloomberg story that says they're considering just that.
Yeah, there's a mess on this coming up right now. So Bloomberg reports DirecTV, Time Warner Cable, and Charter Communications are considering using the aerial model by capturing broadcast TV with their own antennas to avoid retransmission fees. Now, Bloomberg cites people with knowledge of the deliberations, which I thought was pretty clever. The report says the discussions are at a really early stage. Time Warner Cable has even considered buying Aereo, according to one of the people. So far, Aereo has won a number of lawsuits against CBS and other media companies. Retransmission fees, according to SNL Kagan, is $6.1 billion in 2018. It's $3.01 billion this year. Fox and CBS have both mentioned that if Aereo continues to win, they might move their networks to cable only. Peter, how do you see this battle shaking out?
Well, you know, it seems like Aereo has is winning these court battles, right? Where they're able to show that that legally they're in the clear with the way that these rules work. I think one of the challenges is that we essentially have two sets of rules, one for broadcast TV and one for cable TV. And you know, as the boundaries, as the lines become between these two, you know, areas become blurry, and I think Aereo is blurring them and taking advantage of one set of rules to deliver content in a different set of ways that wasn't anticipated. I'm not saying that they're wrong or doing anything illegal, but I do think that it's an area where the rules haven't caught up with the technology. And if you're a broadcast network, I think that you've always had this relationship over wanting to get paid for the retransmission of, you know, of your programming. And this goes back to the early days of cable. And in fact, people forget, but if you go back to the early days of, say, ESPN used to pay the cable companies to carry them, not the other way around, as they were trying to get a foothold. And you know, now that that advertising revenues are so challenged, it's really become, you know, the networks have become very reliant on those carriage fees to make up the difference. And so I think that from a broadcaster standpoint, a system which takes their content and then doesn't pay anything for it, and then is able to charge other people for it, charge the consumers for it, doesn't seem inherently fair. And I can certainly understand that. But I think that we do have to figure out, you know, what it means to offer these big, once valuable over-the-air broadcast licenses to essentially monopolies to broadcasters that don't necessarily make sense in an age of online and cable distribution.
I wonder if this is just one of those things where they don't have an option. I mean, Aereo keeps winning court cases, right? I mean, it's not getting shut down. So it's like, well, what happens? We build the exact same product and then just try to sell it to you ourselves so you don't go to Aereo. We buy Aereo so that, you know, we either shut it down or figure out a way to get all of the money that other people want to pay. It's this is all stems from what can be seen as a bit of a legal loophole that Aereo and the team are just smart enough to have been able to figure out. So, yeah, whether it's fair or not, it's interesting how this may just force the market to work differently.
I would think
we're not going to see a resolution for this for a couple of years, because there's the Aereo killer cases in California that Alki David lost. Because his system works a little differently. It didn't geofence, among other things. And so we have different laws in different parts of the country. That's going to have to go to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court's not going to pick it up until Aereo has either gotten a little farther in their appeals. So this is going to drag out. We're not going to see this happen anytime soon.
I could see the industry just lobbying like crazy. They go, fine, that's the old law. There's a loophole. We're going to close that loophole, because I think that's where they're going to throw their money. Because if they're pulling in this many billions of dollars in retransmission fees, they're probably going to want to make sure they have that forever. So they're going to try to shut this down. Not even if Aereo wins and wins and wins, once that loophole is closed by lobbyists, I'm assuming, then...
Yeah, but the issue is that the broadcast networks, they basically get the airwaves for free, right?
Right.
To broadcast. They get these licenses to broadcast. And then in exchange, they have to offer up their content for free. But also, and then there were sort of some rules, and it gets very murky about how cable providers are able to take that content, and in a sense are actually mandated to carry a lot of that local broadcaster content. You know, because there was one of the issues that historically the local broadcasters were actually worried that as people moved to cable, that that CBS and ABC and NBC and Fox, for example, weren't going to be carried by the cable company, and so people were going to lose audience. And so now, you know, the situation has sort of switched a little bit, but we still have the situation where you have, you know, the requirements the broadcasters are bound by certain requirements around offering up their broadcasts that seem a little bit archaic. But by the same token, if they're willing to give up the airwaves and give up their broadcast license and just become a cable channel, they can certainly do that, right? But I think they can't have it both ways. So I think that's what I think it really comes down to.
Network TV will get crappier and crappier, and the good shows will be like on FX and CNBC and these other...
Or Netflix.
Maybe.
Or Amazon. I mean, I think the end game here is that the broadcast waves are given over to data somehow, and broadcasters are going over the internet. It's all a matter of how do we get there and who makes the money along the way. That's what this battle seems to be about.
Well, and that spectrum is really valuable. If they want to give it back to us and we can to the government and we can auction it off for probably tens of billions of dollars or whatever, like they're more than welcome to do that. So I think that like you have this kind of situation where like both Aereo and the networks are trying to have everything both ways. And we just have to kind of figure out like which way it's going to be.
In the meantime, if we want to get our programming over the internet, we need to have speeds capable of delivering it here in the United States. And the New America Foundation's Cost of Connectivity 2013 study shows that we actually have some of the worst internet connectivity for the price anyway in the United States. New America Foundation is funded by a lot of different people, but Google is a funder. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is a funder. So there's some tech people behind it. They found that the best deal in the United States is Verizon Fios in limited parts of New York City, 150 megabits per second for $130. And that is the most for that kind of speed in their survey. They surveyed 24 different cities across the world, and they found that most cities charge about $80 tops, usually around $50 for comparable speed. Also, our mobile wireless isn't any better here in the U.S. Cheapest mobile is T-Mobile's 2 gigabytes for $30 a month. That's twice as much as London and more than any other European city. It goes on with, you know, talking about mid-range speeds in San Francisco, 20 megabits per second, around $99. In New York, it's $70, whereas in London, it's $38. In Paris, it's $35. And Ars Technica points out there was an OECD report earlier in the summer talking about 45 megabit per second service in the U.S. Being about $90 on average. Now, the NCTA has reacted already. They say, look, states like Vermont, New Hampshire, and Delaware have faster average speeds than Japan. So, you know, it's all a matter of the fact that we have this large geographic area. However, what the NCTA doesn't point out is that Springfield, Vermont, with its 1 gigabit per second service, was able to construct it thanks to stimulus funding from the federal government. And it's still more expensive than Tokyo's KDDI service. It's $35 for gigabit per second in Springfield. Screaming deal. But it's $33 for KDDI in Japan. Scott Cleland, chairman of Net Competition, said, look, you guys are, and this is paraphrasing from the BBC article, but he says, complaining about this is like complaining that you only have access to a Rolls Royce when you have Fords, Chevys, and Cadillacs to choose from. In other words, he's saying, yeah, we don't have a lot of top-end options, but we have lots of other options. Now, you look at the fastest wired speeds in this report. Seoul, first. Tokyo, second. Hong Kong, third. Kansas City, fourth, with Google Fiber. Lafayette, Louisiana, fifth, with a community-funded internet. Chattanooga, Tennessee, sixth, with community-funded internet. Bristol, Virginia, seventh, with government-operated internet. So yeah, we have a lot of Rolls Royces, but they all seem to be funded by the government somehow. Pete, are you happy with the state of broadband in the U.S. and what does this report seem to indicate to you?
I mean, I'm definitely not happy. And living in New York, your options are not that great. And you happen to be in one of the very few spots where you can get Verizon Fios, and they are not building out their network especially aggressively here, because it's actually pretty expensive to wire people up in apartment buildings here. I mean, I think that it's obvious that when there's competition, that people get better speeds and usually for better prices. I this is one of those weird outcomes of telecommunications law that we have to deal with, which is the way that, that the FCC decided to structure the cable business and the way that municipalities have generally given cable providers monopolies or quasi-monopolies over geographic areas in exchange for them guaranteeing to wire up every household. So I think that there's sort of this idea that broadband falls into that sort of natural regulated monopoly area. But if that's the case, then I think that we have to, if you're going to have the case where it makes sense as a natural monopoly, then I think you have to have the government step in and impose, you know, standards like minimum standards or minimum requirements for progress and speed and things like that, which is what again, the cable companies don't want to do, right? The broadband providers don't want to do. They don't want competition, but they want to have these natural monopolies, but they don't also want to be held accountable or regulated in ways that require them to improve their service. And so we've seen that when they do have competition, they do improve. I think there was Time Warner Cable in Austin when they heard that Google Fiber was coming, all of a sudden started to improve their speeds and prices and things like that. And so we kind of have to figure that out. We either have to have better regulation or we have to have more competition, because right now we're getting the worst of both worlds.
Although the NCTA says, look, you know, stop whining about only having a Rolls Royce that's community funded. You can get something else.
But I can't get community funded broadband here in New York City.
Well, and it's not even just community funded. It's that, you know, it took somebody like Google coming into Kansas City and Austin, and it took community funding efforts of various types. It took universities with like Gigabit Squared in Seattle. And the problem is not that those things are happening. It's that they're actually fought. In some states, it's illegal to create community funded internet now. And that's not going to help roll out more broadband. It's these de facto monopolies like you're talking about.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like they want to have a situation where they don't have to face competition, which is, I mean, fine. You can make the argument. I don't necessarily think it's entirely accurate now, but I think you could make the argument that given the cost of building out the infrastructure and things like that, that the only way to recoup your investment is to have a monopoly over a geographic area. I'm not sure how true that is anymore, but there have been, I've seen various, you know, sort of arguments either way. Okay, but let's grant that. Then you have to, then you have to have the government step in and say, you can get the monopoly, but you have to reach certain minimum standards, or we're going to require you to improve your service or quality of service or keep your prices at a certain level, you know, or you lose the monopoly. And I think that they don't want to face, you know, either that or they have to face, you know, the sort of competition. They have to have, you know, systems of competition created that allow other people to compete in those markets. But they can't, yeah, you can't have it both. Like I said, you can't have it both ways. It's not fair. It's not fair to consumers.
Well, but it's a sweet spot to be in if you do have it both ways, right? Because you're raking it in.
Well, Comcast is making, you know, huge amounts of money, and they don't want to screw that up.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about something more fun.
Yay.
Arlo wristband.
All right.
Tracking yourself. Not
really?
The NSA, not cookies, you tracking you.
Yeah. This is Aero, not to be confused with Aereo, which is very different, although we talked about Aereo earlier. It's AIRO, and this is actually not something that you can buy right now. I should say that right off the bat. This is not shipping until possibly in about a year. Fall 2014 is what the company is aiming for, although you can pre-order one for $150 right now. It'll eventually be $200 at the final retail price. So why is it expensive and why is it so cool? Well, the company says not only is it going to track things like your workouts, how many steps you took, but also your sleep patterns, but also what you're eating and the calories you're consuming and your heart rate. So it's the best fitness slash exercise slash, you know, self tracker that I've heard of so far. Abhilash Jayakumar, who's the founder and CEO, co-founder and CEO, says, as your body breaks food down, the sensor can detect the amount of light that passes through the blood based on green, red, and infrared patterns. So for example, you eat a cookie, your sugar intake would spike, and you'd be able to see that spike in the Aero app. Not as if you don't know what you're eating, but it's the sort of thing where right now, if you want to track anything that you eat, there's no way to track it. I mean, you have to enter what you're eating and then possibly rely on some predetermined, well, a cookie has 300 calories in it type of a thing, which is not always the same. Bodies also process things like calories and fiber and fat in different ways, so it makes sense to not necessarily just rely on a nutritional label on the side of a box, but how it's actually affecting your specific body. They say, well, they haven't been able to, let's say, break out something like a simple starch next to a complex carbohydrate, but they plan to do so down the line. It's pretty cool. The stress monitoring is another little kind of cool thing where Aero would supposedly give you a view of, you know, low stress, medium stress, or high stress based on your heart rate. So it's a sort of thing where if you're not really moving around a lot and your heart rate is going through the roof, you're probably not exercising. You might just be stressed, and then it'll suggest that you take some deep breaths, which would probably be really, really annoying if you were actually that stressed out, but still kind of neat. And then exercise mode, again, takes your heart rate into account. So it's less of an issue of like, oh, well, I'm on a stationary bike. My arms aren't moving. My fitness tracker doesn't really know that I'm intensely working because, again, it would be monitoring your heart rate. I don't know. I know this isn't a product yet, but Peter, is this something that you think is... let's just start with the food part of it and looking at your bloodstream. Does that even sound legit?
I don't know. It sounds a little sketchy to me. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I feel like for what is this going to be, like $150 or $140 or something like that?
Exactly.
It seems like a pretty complicated piece of technology, and I'm just a little skeptical because I think if this were so, I don't know if I've ever heard of any like medical device, for example, which does this in the same method. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm certainly not familiar with everything that's out there, but it sounds really complicated. I can see that. I mean, I think the stress stuff and the other things, yeah, that's, I think that's actually probably doable, but I think the scanning the blood stuff sounds very tricky. And even if you could do what they're talking about, I feel like the accuracy would have to be so low. I mean, I wear a Fitbit, and even the Fitbit is not, I mean, just, it's not, doesn't even track my steps 100% accurately, and let alone like my bloodstream.
Yeah, this strikes me as something where what they're saying is technically true, but it can't work as well as they would like you to think it would work. I agree with you that we would be hearing about this kind of analysis a lot. And maybe there is something like this out there. I don't think Dr. Mom is in the chat room today, or somebody might be letting us know. But I feel like this is overpromising. But again, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I just feel like last time I had to have, I feel like usually you have blood drawn or something like that to get this kind of analysis, right? Like if they could just hook you up to a little wristband thing, I feel like, I mean, even if it was just like you go into a hospital and you pop your arm in and it measures, you know, like I feel like I would have heard of that at some point.
Right. Like, how have they cracked the code here?
I seriously want this to be true. Like, I want to believe this is going to happen. This is going to be real.
I think it's the greatest product ever. And I'm hoping, it works as designed.
And I'm hoping that maybe the technology is not, doesn't exist now by 2014 in the fall when it comes out, like, which is like might as well be 100 years from now, internet time. Next fall, will this be a reality? If it can track all of those things, and even if it's not terribly accurate, if it can be within, I don't know, maybe 10% margin of error, that could be something useful. Because a lot of these fitness products, they're not dead on. They're not very good at determining different activities, let alone figuring out what you're eating. Then you have to figure out how is this going to be, how are you going to interact with this device? Because looking at the mock-up of it, it doesn't appear to have any buttons or display or anything. So how is it constantly giving you feedback other than using your phone? If it's using Bluetooth all the time,
it uses your blood.
It just buzzes you.
It sends the messages right to your brain.
Oh, I like that. So it's got like neurotransmitters. You seem stressed.
Angry, and then it starts measuring things.
Right.
I definitely like that little you seem stressed. How about some breathing exercises? But yeah, that seems like it would get really irritating.
Oh yeah, I mean that would send me through the roof.
It's like, would you like to throw your phone at
the? I can't deal with one more notification. Right. I think the whole bloodstream thing, I agree with you guys. I mean, it just sounds far-fetched. I mean, how is this company figuring out how that works if we haven't had medical professionals or even like a large company like Nike not already on the case?
It's good enough, but it's probably, but we'll have to see. Let's fire up the old randomizer, shall we? Randomizer. A straw poll today with three different stories in there. And the one with 42%, pretty close. Historical Software Archive lets you use vintage software in your browser. This is archive.org. Taking the software that they have already preserved, they've been doing that for a long time, pairing it up with a JavaScript MESS emulation machine so that you can run it in your browser. And they have VisiCalc running on a emulated 1979 Apple II. They have the Apple game E.T., which some people credit for ruining the video game industry in the early 1980s.
I just ended up in a pit of E.T. This is a bummer. I could be down here for a long time.
Yeah, we'll let Jason deal with that because I don't think he's ever coming back.
Are you in the pit with all the cartridges they put?
Yes. That's what the pit's made out.
That's why you can never get out.
You know, it's funny, Baratunde Thurston tweeted out a JS machine for Windows 1.0 that I was playing with on my phone. I was playing Reversi on my phone yesterday, and I thought it was connected, but apparently not. It's apparently just kind of a trend these days to be running old operating systems on a JavaScript machine. But check it out, archive.org. Pretty fun stuff.
Love it.
Let's move on to the calendar.
Tomorrow, October 29th, Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag is launching for the PlayStation 3, the Xbox 360, and Nintendo's Wii U. Also tomorrow, we've got Groupon, Yelp, and Apple Earnings.
Ooh, Apple Earnings. Everybody already thinks they know. And they've already written their spin stories. They're just waiting for...
Oh, who cares about Apple when you got Groupon? Groupon Earnings.
Still running.
That's my big jam. Oh. Yeah, I don't know.
It's your earnings jam. I didn't know you had an earnings jam.
I do. Now you know. It's Groupon.
All right, let's check some email.
Incoming message.
Or some voicemail, in this case, actually. I got a caller from Michigan with an explanation of why he thinks Microsoft's sticking with Bing.
But I really think you missed the forest for the trees on Bing when you were talking about Microsoft's earnings recently.
If Microsoft dumped Bing right now, it would be pretty disastrous for all of their products that they're working on. I mean, if you look at Windows 8.1, it's built right in. They power the search behind Windows Phone and probably that whole Cortana thing. They even built the apps that are built into Windows 8 and 8.1. And I think if you cut off all of those, then you really leave the entire product line very weak. And even if it's costing a lot of money, it's adding a value to a huge amount of other products. So that's why they were reorganized the way they were. And I think it makes a lot more sense that way. They're not trying to hire. Bing is just genuinely building value for all of those other services. So anyways, even if they never make it up alone in ad revenue, though that is increasing, there's still plenty of reasons to keep it around. Anyways, thanks. Bye.
It's a fair point. Bing is a sunk cost in that situation. I think it's still a fair question to debate whether contracting that out to someone, maybe not Google, maybe somebody else, would be just as valuable. But I guess Microsoft feels like they can afford to continue the Bing experiment. It'll get less costly over time. And they have control over the data in that case. Then.
We got an email from Amar. Says, hey, TNT team, in episode 868, Martin Giles, love him as a guest, he is witty, extolled that the internet isn't a bad thing and his two daughters have genuine relationships with their friends. But being a devil's advocate here, do you think that maybe Martin and the rest of the tech world might be trying to validate how they live their life? I remember Sarah saying something like, being on the internet is more exciting than anything else I can do, or something like that. I guess I say this because I've been reading and just finished a new book called The Circle by Dave Eggers. It's a dystopic look at the tech world in a different prism. And while I thought the ending was vapid and perfunctory, I would encourage y'all and your audience to take a gander at it. I think its theme is particularly apropos these days.
It's kind of the battle of two extremes, isn't it? You know, on the one extreme, you've got the technorati sometimes coming off as like, technology is everything and there's never anything wrong with it. And then you have others screaming that technology is ruining our youth. Truth somewhere in the middle there, I think.
It ruins everything. Let's disagree to that. No.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't ruined Peter Rojas, thank goodness. And thanks for joining us today, Pete.
Thanks for having me back. Always fun.
Anything going on over there at AOL that you want to share with the folks before we let you go?
I'm working on a bunch of stuff, which we'll see in 2014, but nothing I can share right now, I think.
All right. In the meantime.
Is it a tracker that can like check what you ate?
Yeah, I'm going to require everyone's blood. Let's just leave it at that.
AOL blood scan coming next year.
That's our next big product.
Excellent. You can follow Pete at Peter Rojas, Rojas, on Twitter. And, of course, about.me/Peter. Thanks again, man.
Thanks.
Don't forget, you can help us pick our stories at technewstoday.reddit.com. It's a place to vote things up, vote things down, and submit story ideas. We keep an eye on it as well as a lot of other sources, but it's one of the main ones we look at when we figure out what we're going to talk about each day. And big thanks to the mods in there that keep it clean, keep it useful. It's a great resource for us, technewstoday.reddit.com. You can also email us, tnt@twit.tv. Give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/technewstoday. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast, get the show notes, and everything you want at twit.tv/TNT. We will be back tomorrow. There will be more tech news, and there will be Jerry Ellsworth on the show. See you then.